You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Next up, the Arctic is melting, and it appears that its average temperature is rising at almost twice the rate as the rest of the world. Pretty interesting. Very unexpected, I think. Eight nations with land in the Arctic region, along with six groups of indigenous peoples, almost involving about 300 scientists, released a report this week on the Arctic climate. It is the most comprehensive study to date on the extent of warming in that region over the last century, and it makes predictions for what's going to be happening 100 years from now. And, well, what can we expect? The report says the polar ice cap is shrinking at such a rate that by the end of the century, summers in the Arctic may be ice-free. In Alaska, Western Canada, and East Russia over the past 50 years, average temperatures have increased as much as 4 to 7 degrees Fahrenheit. That's nearly twice the global average. And so by the end of the century, temperatures are expected to rise 7 to 13 degrees more. And so that, what's going to do to the animals, caribou, reindeer, seals that live in the cold environment? Well, they may vanish, and the Arctic's people that depend on them are going to be in trouble. So for the rest of the hour, we're going to talk about the study, how climate change is playing out in the Arctic, what that means for the people there and around the world. And all that melting ice means not only is the Arctic going to look like a different place, but so is New York, New Orleans, and all the other low-lying coastal areas in the U.S. and around the world. So, excuse me. We're also going to talk about what needs to be done to slow this fast-paced warming, what the U.S. policy is towards global warming, and we'll get into that. The State Department, the U.S. State Department, had this reaction to the Arctic climate impact statement assessment, saying that it would seek, quote, a market-based approach to counteract climate change, letting the market take care of that. So if you'd like to join our discussion on global warming science and policy, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. Let me introduce my guests. Daniel Lashoff is the science director of the NRDC Climate Center at the Natural Resources Defense Council in Washington. He's here with us today in our Science Friday studios in New York. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Waiting to see if we can get Dr. Robert Correll, a senior fellow at the American Meteorological Society, who's at the meeting in Reykjavik, which is in over there, still going on. We're trying to get him by phone, so hang on. We'll see if we can get him through those magical cell phone connections if we can. But while I have you here, Dan Lashoff, what is your reaction to this study so far?
Well, this is a really important study. As you mentioned, the most comprehensive study yet of the impacts of global warming on the Arctic. And the implications are not just for the ice, but for the animals in the Arctic, the people who live in the Arctic, as well as the rest of us, because what happens in the Arctic affects all of us. As ice melts there, less sunlight is reflected into space, and that amplifies the warming in the world as a whole. And as ice melts from glaciers in Alaska and Greenland and other Arctic land-based glaciers, that water goes into the oceans and raises sea levels, as you mentioned, flooding areas like South Florida in particular, but even New York City. Other low-lying
New Orleans places. It almost seems like the scientists themselves were caught off by how fast this is happening by the study here.
Yeah, this study, I think when they pulled all the data together, people had been studying bits and pieces of this for quite some time, but when they pulled all the data together, I think the scientists themselves were surprised at how stark the picture is, how rapid the warming has been, and how rapidly the ice is retreating. We've already seen a 20% reduction in summer sea ice in the Arctic, and that really has caught people by surprise.
Just about everywhere you go up there, you know, there were stories about the ice melting in Greenland, and we've seen stories of in the paper, even northern areas, not so far north in China, where there are glaciers that are melting that had never been seen to melt before. And I remember there were pictures in the newspapers of open seas, you know, up near the poles.
That's right. I think one of the important things about this study and looking at the Arctic as a bellwether for the rest of the world is that we've talked about global warming as something we project to happen in the future for quite a while, as scientists have studied this. We're seeing the effects of global warming right now in the Arctic in a very dramatic way as the ice has retreated, as temperatures have warmed, as polar bears are finding it more difficult to catch the seals that they depend on, and the Inuit people in the Arctic are finding it more difficult to hunt for the food that they've traditionally relied on.
Now, this is a study composed by the people who are actually in the Arctic. This is interesting that it was Canada, Denmark, Finland, Iceland, Norway, the Russian Federation, Sweden, and the U.S., all countries that have parts of their land there and their people. They're interested. Is Is the Arctic sort of the miner's canary here for the rest of the world?
Absolutely. You're right. This study was commissioned by the 8 Arctic countries, the countries that have land bordering the Arctic Circle and the Arctic Ocean. But also, interestingly, the native peoples of the Arctic were directly involved in this study, and they went out and talked to elders of the Inuit and other native groups in the Arctic, and found that the stories that they were telling correlated extremely well with what the scientific data was showing, so that Native people were saying, we're seeing changes, we're seeing robins for the first time, we're finding it dangerous to hunt in areas where we could normally rely on sea ice. And then they looked at that against the scientific data from satellites and from other systematic measurements, and they found this really matches up.
Yeah, we've seen data where the permafrost is no longer permafrost. You know, housing is sinking into the mud in Alaska.
Well, that's right. Yeah, you're seeing, I mean, much of Alaska is built with engineering that is designed to use the properties of permafrost, and that permafrost is melting, and roads are buckling, houses are cracking. A number of native villages are likely to have to be moved at costs of hundreds of millions of dollars, not only because the permafrost is melting, but as the sea ice retreats. Uh-huh. Then you see severe erosion as the winter storms are no longer buffered by a hard pack of sea ice.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the take-home message for people who are not in the North, don't live in the Arctic communities, is, you know, this is going to head your way. You're going to feel the impact of melting ice. There's talk about just how high the ocean would rise if the Greenland ice cap, the ice sheets on Greenland were to melt, you know, from a few half a foot to 20 feet. I've seen numbers like that. And they're going to head, that water is heading someplace.
That's right. You know, the message here is that global warming is happening now, and importantly, that the pollution, carbon dioxide pollution from power plants and automobiles, is primarily responsible for the warming we're seeing. It'll accelerate further in the future if we don't take steps to reduce that pollution.
Mm-hmm. As one of the Arctic countries involved, the U.S., seems like, though, is one of the few that has not taken concrete measures, mandatory measures. The president reiterates that he's not going. He thinks it's bad for the economy to force industries and people putting out the greenhouse gases to cap their emissions, like the Kyoto Treaty would ask us to.
Well, that's right. The United States is definitely isolated on this issue at this time.
Blair is talking about it, isn't he?
Tony Blair is talking about it. Well, I know that Tony Blair said clearly that he's going to make global warming a key issue in the Group of 8 industrialized countries, which he will chair starting in January, whether it's on the agenda this week or not. There are obviously a lot of other things for them to talk about today. But it's definitely on the agenda. The Queen even urged Tony Blair to make this an important issue as he leads the G8 countries. So the other countries are moving forward. They have put in place limits on carbon dioxide and other heat-trapping gases, and their industries are responding by investing in advanced technology that can reduce those emissions. So the U.S. is really finding itself isolated both diplomatically and economically, as our industries are not keeping up with the German and Danish windmakers, for example, or with the Japanese automakers who have taken the lead.
Do you think that's going to change at all? I mean, even this week, the State Department said, it's a market-based approach to counteract climate change, which says we're not putting caps.
There are two
senators, bipartisan Senate support, Joe Lieberman and John McCain have a bill in Congress that has gone nowhere.
Right.
To cap and trade the emissions.
Using the market is fine, but you have to actually put some enforceable limits on for the market to work effectively. What the administration has done is put forward what really is a fig leaf policy of just saying we'll rely on industry to voluntarily take steps. In other words, we'll rely on the market, but we're not going to actually give the market a signal that would be needed to really drive emissions down and drive investment in advanced technology. Now, I certainly hope that in light of the new evidence that's pulled together in this report, the administration will review and revise its position on global warming. The sort of immediate reaction from government officials who've spoken on this in the last week has been to say, no, we developed our policy 4 years ago, and we really don't want to hear anything new about it. I sincerely hope that it will change. Frankly, I don't see evidence that it will. But here, this is an opportunity going into the second term for the president to look at new data and adopt a responsible position that will actually address the problem.
To see if he, you know, also to reach out to Europe.
to reach out to Europe and where this is a very important issue, and it really has strained our relationships with Europe. Obviously, Tony Blair, one of our strongest allies throughout the first term, takes this issue very seriously, and he's in serious trouble at home if he is not able to move the Bush administration on global warming. And people are looking at Tony Blair in the UK saying, well, you followed the president's policy in Iraq and you seem to be doing whatever he wants. On global warming, you obviously have a different policy. Do you have any influence based on your special relationship? We'll have to see.
Talking with Dan Lashoff this hour, Talk of the Nation. We're going to go to the phones, 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Fairbanks. Merrick in Fairbanks. Hi. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Ira. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
Very good. I've always enjoyed your program. And not that too many here in the subarctic will complain about warmer winter temperatures.
Mm-hmm.
A huge concern that some of us have is the prospect of runaway global warming, which could be caused by melting permafrost in the Arctic regions. And let me explain this hypothesis. As you release CO in the atmosphere, you increase the average global temperatures, which causes permafrost in the Arctic regions to begin to thaw. And as that permafrost melts, it releases CH4, or methane, into the atmosphere. And methane is a very potent greenhouse gas, even more potent than carbon dioxide. So the more CH4 we release into the atmosphere, the more warming that occurs, and the more the permafrost melts, releasing even more CH4. And so then what you end up with is a runaway greenhouse effect, which we will be twiddling our thumbs, powerless to stop. And so obviously, you know, prevention is the key. So if you or your guests could comment on this, you know, policy, you know, environmental policy in this country is established not by scientists but by politicians.
Dan, any comments?
Well, the caller is making a very good point. That is one of the concerns, as he said. This is one of what we call positive feedbacks that are built into the climate system. As permafrost melts, this methane is released. Also, there's a lot of carbon stored in organic soils in the Arctic, which, as it thaws out, is released as organisms start to break that carbon down and release it, either as methane or as carbon dioxide. If it's released as methane, it's even more powerful, as he said, but even as CO2, that amplifies the global warming. And, you know, I don't know whether I would use the term runaway greenhouse effect, but it certainly amplifies the warming to a very significant and concerning degree. And once these processes are set in motion at a certain point, it's very you've kind of lost your opportunity to really get ahead of it. So it's very important that we act now to reduce the emissions that we can control from power plants and automobiles and industrial sources. I mean, those are the bulk of the emissions right now, and we know how to control them. We have the technology. We need, as he said, the political will to put in place the limits that would actually drive those emissions down.
Merrick, do you see the change in the seasons at all? Oh, you there? I guess we lost him. Because he's in Alaska. I thought, you know, the growing seasons are changing. The Canadians are talking about the benefits, which might be more wheat. You can grow more wheat in the summertime, right?
Well, you could grow more wheat. The people have talked about possibly opening up sea lanes.
The Russian sea lanes?
The predominant indications are that the overwhelming effects are negative. As you said, permafrost melting and causing roads to decay. You're seeing forests in Alaska that have been devastated by pine bark beetles, which have been able to reproduce much more rapidly, get two or three seasons per year where they used to get one. So in the Kenai Peninsula, what used to be a healthy forest just 10 years ago has been almost entirely destroyed. So we're seeing a wide variety of very damaging effects going on right now in Alaska.
We're talking this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. We, you know, what's interesting is this came up once during a program we were doing on diseases and some of the world's greatest plagues. And, you know, we had a malaria specialist on. And he said, oh, by the way, you know, this didn't come up. Malaria is killing countless millions of people still around the world. He said, we discovered that we now find mosquitoes growing at higher altitudes than we used to. And that's really a problem because we used to, you know, we established a certain level, of, you know, a certain level down the side of a mountain. People have developed some sort of immunity over the generations, and now they hit this whole new population of people who've never seen a mosquito. I mean, not seen it. They've never been bothered by a malarial mosquito, and they're just being wiped out. And
Yeah, that's
interesting. Interesting way to discover, you know, the heating going up the sides of the mountain.
No, that's right. You can literally see the expansion of the range of the mosquitoes that carry malaria both up mountains and up in latitude towards northern latitudes, and that does expose new populations to malaria. A major concern of the World Health Organization and public health officials around the world.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones. Dave in Tempe, Arizona. Hi, Dave.
How are you?
Hi. How are you?
A pretty good, interesting connection to the last story there. You were talking about malaria, and just quickly, I had heard that ever since they discontinued DDT, malaria was on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting to be able to correlate that. But my question was, your discussion only mentioned the Arctic areas, and you said that they were potentially going to see ice-free summers, and I was wondering if that was true for the Antarctic.
Well, that's a good point. This study is only put together by, you know, the Arctic areas. But, you know, there are not a whole lot of people that live in Antarctica. You could fit them into a ballpark. But it's a good point about the melting of Antarctica.
Yeah, Antarctica is a little bit different because the Arctic is basically landless. I mean, you have sea ice that covers most of the area. Greenland, obviously, is a landmass, but most of the area is ocean, and that's where we're seeing the retreat of sea ice and where we're talking about an ice-free Arctic in the summer, in the future. Antarctica, because it's a continent, it's based on land, it's higher altitude, so the center of Antarctica is really not going to melt in any scenario we've looked at. But the edges, we are seeing change. The East Antarctic Peninsula, I mean, the West Antarctic Peninsula, which kind of extends up towards South America, is seeing some very rapid warming. We are seeing the advance. There's been reports just in the last few months of new studies showing that the glaciers there are advancing towards the ocean more rapidly, creating, again, a similar scenario to Greenland, where if we allow things to warm up by maybe just one more degree, those glaciers could be surging towards the ocean, and at that point, there's nothing you can do about it. You're going to have a huge increase in sea levels.
And the amount of, I think, 90% of the fresh water on the Earth is locked up in Antarctica.
Yeah, it's a huge ice mass. And again, not all of it will melt, but even if a small portion of it melts, it's a serious problem.
And we've seen these record-sized icebergs already breaking off, calving off from the showing you these giant icebergs.
Right, in West Antarctica, Larsen B ice shelf, which broke up again very suddenly, much more rapidly than scientists had expected a couple of years ago.
Yeah. We're going to take a short break and take more of your questions about global warming, what's going on in the Arctic. If you have any other questions, we'll see if we can get our call into Reykjavik taken care of. Find Robert Correll and see if he can join us. But we're talking with Daniel Leshoff, a science director of the NRDC Climate Center at the Natural Resources Defense Council in Washington. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And more of your calls. Don't go away. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about global warming in the Arctic and focusing in on the Arctic Climate Impact Assessment Report, Impacts of a Warming Arctic, it's called, and the key findings of it. With me is Robert Correll, chair of the Arctic Climate Daniel Leshoff. We're trying to get him. Daniel Leshoff, science director of the NRDC Climate Center at the Natural Resources Defense Council in Washington. On the phone now with us is Susan Hassel, who is author of the ACIA Synthesis Report. She actually helped. You actually wrote the report, Susan?
I did. I worked with a team of 300 scientists that have been working for 4 years on this assessment. When they came to me 3 years ago, they had a 2,000-page, highly technical document that no one would be able to understand, and they asked me to write a 100-page synthesis of it that would communicate the key findings of that assessment in a way that policymakers and the public could understand.
Yeah, and it's very comprehensive. I'm just looking at the summary headings. It talks about melting Greenland ice sheets, rising sea levels, threats to polar bears, Arctic mammals, indigenous peoples, forest changes, insect outbreaks, fires, marine transport, human health impact, West Nile virus, UV radiation, thawing permafrost, and it goes on. It's hard to, just about everything gets impacted by this.
Well, that's true, and not only does everything in the Arctic get impacted, but everything around the world is impacted as well. I mean, some of the things you mentioned that happen in the Arctic, large shifts of species and vegetation zones, entire ecosystem changes, tremendous melting of the polar ice. We've already lost an area of sea ice as large as Texas and Arizona combined, and it looks like by the end of this century we could lose all of the summer sea ice. Now, the impacts of that are enormous, of course, in the region, polar bears, ringed seals, mm-hmm. and the people who depend on those species. But impacts to the world are really interesting as well, because there are a number of climate feedbacks that take place when you lose all that snow and ice. You get an amplification of the global warming because of the increased absorption of solar energy at the surface. Also, of course, sea level rise is a global issue. And as the oceans warm, they expand. And as land-based ice throughout the Arctic melts, it increases sea level. And we're seeing accelerated melting of glaciers in Alaska and Canada and on the Greenland ice sheet as well. Mm-hmm. So there really are global implications, even changes in ocean circulation that could cool Europe, even as the rest of the world warms.
Mm-hmm. Was there any study, there was that movie recently about what happens if we lose the, you know, the current, the warm ocean currents going up the East Coast. Was there any study of that into what might happen in the Arctic?
Yes, there was, and that's one of the feedbacks that we look at and discuss in the report. You'll see it there under Key Finding 2 about the global consequences of Arctic warming. What happens basically, I'll try and give you a short synopsis, mm-hmm. is that when you add a lot of fresh water to the oceans in the key place in the Arctic, you change the balance of heat and salinity that's necessary. What you need is for that water in the Arctic and the North Atlantic to be cold and salty enough to sink, because that sinking drives the pumping that pulls warm water northward on the surface in the Gulf Stream and other currents. What's happening now is we're adding so much fresh water to that special place in the Arctic because of the melting of sea ice, because of the melting of land-based ice, because of the increase in precipitation. We've seen an 8% roughly increase in precipitation over the Arctic because of the warming and increased river flows to the ocean. All of that fresh water ends up capping that place with fresh water, just the way oil would float on top of water, and it doesn't sink as efficiently, and that doesn't drive that pumping. Now, that pumping is necessary to carry warmth towards Europe and other areas around the North Atlantic to make them warm. If that circulation is slowed down or even shut down, then it could mean abrupt climate change for Europe. Now, we're not projecting that to happen, but we're saying we're taking the steps towards making that happen, and it's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's see if we can go to the phones. Let's go to Alan to Kitna, Alaska. Hi, Al. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Ira. How are you?
How are you? What's going on in Alaska these days?
Well, we had a lot of snow on Tuesday, and we've had a mixture of rain and snow the last 2 days. So it's typical November weather in Alaska.
Have you noticed any changes in the season where you are? Where is Tiquitna?
Talkeetna is approximately 100 miles north of Anchorage, and yes, I have noticed a change. We had our warmest summer on record last summer. We were approximately 5 degrees above average, and it was hot here for over 2 months, which is very unusual. It did cool down at nights, but the daytime temperatures were warm for this part of Alaska.
Have you got a question for us, Al?
Yes, I sure do, Ira. My question is, Ira, you know, I watch knowledgeable people that I know who have a sense of this problem, but I watch them get into their cars and drive to town, and I watch them fly out of Alaska down to the lower 48. How are we going to change the mindset of people in this country to stop using so much fossil fuels? I mean, not only are we causing global warming, but, you know, we're killing people in a foreign land because of oil. Mm-hmm. When are we going to learn?
Mm-hmm. Dan, any reaction?
Well, I think the key is better technology. I think it's very difficult to tell people, and I don't think it's our business to tell people to change the way they live. I think we can give people better choices of automobiles that put less carbon dioxide into the atmosphere to drive whatever distance people want to drive. And people can make choices on their own try to buy a car that meets their needs rather than perhaps a...
If you can find one. Prius has a year waiting list.
Right. And that's an example of where the U.S. auto industry has been very slow to invest in the technologies that we need, both to reduce our dependence on foreign oil and to reduce the carbon dioxide going into the atmosphere. And it has put U.S. workers at risk. There have been big layoffs at General Motors recently because their strategy has been to sell gas guzzlers. But we do have the technology to do much better than we're doing now. We need a consistent policy that will make for to give the right signal to invest in those technologies so that people can find better vehicles and they don't have to wait and then buy a Japanese car if they want to get a hybrid that gets twice the miles per gallon.
Hi, Al. Take care.
Take care of yourself, Ira. Thank you.
You all have a good weekend. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. A lot of people want to call. We're getting Alaska into. Let's stay with Alaska. Jerry in Anchorage. Hi, Jerry.
Yes, sir.
Hi, go ahead.
Instead of being at the moon like the rest of you people are doing, I'll point a problem out and then I'll give you a solution to it. There are 2 trillion cubic feet a year used for oil production on the North Slope of Alaska. That means flue gas, that's your carbon dioxide and the rest of it. I think the number after trillion is quadrillion. That's 2 quadrillion BTUs.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of heat. Now, that flue gas can be injected down into the reservoir on the north, the reservoirs on the North Slope for enhanced oil production. But nobody's doing it, and nobody will insist on it. We just blow it into the sky.
Okay.
Good idea. Actually, there are a few places, not in Alaska, but some places in Texas where carbon dioxide is, in fact, being injected into oil wells for enhanced oil recovery. And if you do that, if you're taking carbon dioxide, say, from power plants to do that and then keeping that carbon dioxide underground, that actually could contribute to reducing our emissions while we're actually enhancing our domestic production. Unfortunately, right now, because we have no market signal, because the president has refused to endorse any mandatory limits on CO2, he does not support the bipartisan McCain-Lieberman bill that you made a reference to before. People aren't doing that. They're actually taking more CO2 out of the ground from natural reservoirs to use for enhanced oil recovery, and it's just making the problem worse. So I think that this caller and others have pointed to, we have a lot of technologies. What we need is a policy. Senator McCain and Senator Lieberman have really pointed the way with a very sensible way to get started in dealing with this problem. And I think this report on the impacts on the Arctic show that it really is urgent that we move to putting those policies in place.
Susan Astle, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to follow up. I totally agree with both the caller and with Dan. I was going to say that in Norway, where they do have a signal, because they do have a cap on carbon dioxide emissions, the Norwegian state oil company called Statoil is already doing just that. They're reinjecting carbon dioxide down into gas wells, oil wells in the North Sea. And it does take the signal that Dan's talking about. As long as it's free to keep putting carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, that's what people are going to do. Once you get the signal, then they stop doing that. However, that technology, we should say, is not completely developed and completely proven yet. They're still working on it. So that what carbon sequestration, the grabbing of carbon and putting it somewhere, is a very important part of the solution, but it's not the complete solution. We need to also work on energy efficiency and the other renewable energy technologies that Dan's been mentioning.
We're talking about global warming in the Arctic for the rest of the hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Susan, does this report the impacts of warming Arctic, does it take any political message here? Does it recommend any political messages, or is it purely scientific?
Okay, in the scientific report, we don't take any political stance or recommend policy because we don't feel like that's really our role. However, when the Arctic Council ordered this report 4 years ago, and the Arctic Council, you may have mentioned, is made up of the 8 countries that have land in the Arctic, which includes the U.S. because of Alaska, as well as Canada, Russia, and all the Scandinavian countries, when they called for this assessment, they asked for 3 things. They asked for a huge scientific tome, which they're going to get shortly. They asked for this summary synthesis report, which we've produced and released last week. And then they asked for a set of policy recommendations. They didn't ask the scientists for those recommendations. They asked a political group appointed by each of the countries to work on those policy recommendations based on the science. So about a year ago, the scientific community, we forwarded to that policy team our key findings, and they set about drafting policy recommendations. Then they came back to us and said, here's what we've drafted. We want to ask you one question about these. Is there anything we've recommended here that's not supported by the science? We looked them over and said, no, everything you're suggesting is supported by the science. Then it went back into the political process. On November 24th, those policy recommendations are supposed to be released at a meeting of the senior Arctic officials of the Arctic Council. Now, what we're hearing is that they're having some difficulty reaching consensus. because the Arctic Council is a consensus body. They don't simply vote.
Mm-hmm.
And right now they've got the support of 7 of the 8 countries for some strong policy recommendations.
Can I guess which country is not there?
And Susan may not want to jump in and say that, but it's clearly the United States, which is dragging its feet as it has been for about the last year throughout this process, slowing down the process of developing policy recommendations and trying to water them down because the U.S. is isolated. The Bush administration simply has continued to refuse to consider any mandatory limits on carbon dioxide, whether it's Kyoto, which the rest of the countries have ratified and are moving forward with. It may be too late for the U.S. to actually participate in that. But failing that, the Bush administration said we'd have some other policy. But the reality is that they haven't put forward any meaningful steps to limit the emissions of carbon dioxide and other heat-trapping gases.
But there are some companies on their own that have.
There are a number of companies, U.S. companies, some multinational companies, which are facing limits in Europe and Japan, are taking steps. U.S. companies are recognizing that they need to make the investments because that's the direction the world is moving in terms of technology. And some companies, either privately or a few brave ones publicly, saying, you know, it's really time to put in place a policy like the McCain-Lieberman bill that puts a limit, lets us know what that limit's going to be so we can make rational investments and develop and put in place technologies to reduce the emission that cause global warming, because it doesn't help industry either to have the uncertainty that we're currently living under.
Mm-hmm. Susan Hassley, will that report come out or is it going to be locked up forever?
Well, something's supposed to come out on November 24th. I'm not exactly sure what it'll look like, but something will indeed be released on the 24th. At least that's what we're being told. I really agreed with everything Dan just said, and if I could just add one small point, this administration keeps seeming to make the argument that signing up to Kyoto or doing anything about greenhouse gas emissions would hurt our economy. Dan mentioned these companies that are doing something about this and reducing their emissions. And interestingly enough, what they're finding is that it improves their bottom line when they make those changes. Because the first thing they do, of course, is increase their energy efficiency. And when they do that, they make more money, not less. BP is a great example. They're an oil company, and they're working to reduce their emissions, and they're actually finding that it's making them more money.
Well, I want to thank both of you. We're going to watch this and see what happens with that report, see if it ever gets out of there. Thank you very much for sitting in and pinch hitting today, Susan.
No problem.
Susan Joy Hassel, who is author of the ACIIA In Synthesis Report, Impacts of a Warming Arctic, which is part of the Arctic Climate Impact Assessment. Also, thank you very much to Dennis Lashoff, Science Director of the NRDC Climate Center at NRDC in Washington.
Thank you, Aaron.
Thanks for taking time to be with us. Kevin Wade is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Paul Masiello in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music. And we had help today from NPR librarians Kim Oleski and Alphonse Finn. Surf over to Science Friday. If you missed any of the program, we've got links there. Also, you can listen to old editions of Science Friday and also Science Friday Kids Connection. Click on Teachers, get free curricula, and we'll turn this show into some free teaching materials for you. You can download them from our website. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.